Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session. This August 5th, 2025. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
I'm here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mr. Ringstad.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Okay. First item on the agenda is our risk fund overview at the request of Ms. Therrien. We have both the city attorney and the chief financial officer here. Margarita, would you start out by explaining how we fund the risk fund?
Before you, good morning, council members. Thank you, Mayor. Before you is a chart that shows you the different funds that we have within the city. It also gives you information about the fund type, and that is more accounting for us and how we're supposed to report it within your financial statements. And then you have a description, and I have the question about budgets and what's budgeted, and you'll see references for authorization for spending. And if we go down to the risk fund, I can either go through each fund and briefly and give you an oversight of it briefly, or we can go straight to the risk fund, which you'll see it accounts for expenditures associated with claims, new judgments, and mitigation insurance. On your second sheet, you will see the references of two codes, section 2-603. And section 2-603 establishes the risk fund. It's a special revenue fund that is an accounting term. If a fund has a specific revenue source, then we can identify that as a separate fund. And basically, when I mention the term fund, think of it as a bank account. You have your primary bank account. This is the account that you use everything for. That's pretty much what your general fund is. And then you might have separate different bank accounts for specific purposes. Like you might have another bank account you use for savings. You might have another one that you use for your vacation. So this is basically, think of that piece of it when I use the term fund. And basically a fund just gives you, for accounting definition purposes, it just means that this account can have a balance sheet and an income and expense statement. So the code 2-603 establishes that risk fund, and it states that it's to recover costs associated with claims, new judgments, and mitigation insurance. Section 2-832 is one of, it's really taken out of the section on about compromise, and it states who can approve, that the city attorney can arbitrate, and it also gives the approval of the mayor for expenditures, and at one level, the council approves the expenditures. If you turn to the final page of your packet for the risk fund, I provided you a risk fund expenditures as of July 31, 2025. I have it with a comparison of 2024 so that you can see how the expenditures move from one year to the next, how we appropriate the funds for the property tax through the mill levy. Take, for example, if we're looking at 2024, you'll see that there were property taxes of $2,451,531. That was the expenditures from 2023, shifting over for revenue for the following year. And you'll see in 2024, we had a total expenditures of $2,033,060. I kind of have an error there, so that I can, so that you can see when we look at the year to date that that amount is the amount that we levied in 2025. And then you see that there is one insurance expense that is not under the property tax levy, under the special levy that we have for the risk fund, and that is the general insurance, and we usually do a transfer from the general fund to cover that cost, and you usually would see that during the budgeting process. And for the year to date, you'll see that our total expenditures year to date is 5.2 million, almost 5.3 million. You will see under other financing sources that additional 3 million, a transfer from the council that will reduce that expenditure down to 2.2 million as of this date.
Questions for Margarita? Ms. Therrien.
Thank you so much, Margarita. And do we find this in the budget when we're reviewing it?
No, this is not a budgeted. This account or fund is not budgeted. It's not a part of that budgeting process. The only part that you budget is the amount that we transfer to cover the general insurance. The other portions of the cost are covered through the mill levy.
As city council members, you are voting to accept any liabilities, judgments, things like that. That's when you're acknowledging it, voting on it, approving it, and it goes to the risk fund or from the risk fund. Mr. Ringstead.
Oh, I had some more, but okay. John can. So if the general insurance is transferred from the general fund, is that part included in our budget?
Yes, that part is included in your budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And we have insurance now. Good. Mr. Ringstead.
So under our expenditures side here, we have the workers' comp insurance, professional, police insurance, auto insurance. Are these claims or are these what I would have thought would be general insurance down under other expenditures?
They are insurance. You have workers' comp insurance as well as workers' comp claims.
But in this item, I mean, I'm just thinking the difference is, I guess kind of the same place I think where Val was going. Our insurance for workers' comp, auto liability, that's, to me, that would be a regular budgeted item. The claims are the, I would have thought would be different.
Under the code
we're
section,
spending a lot of money on insurance.
That is correct. Under section 2-603, it is also includes not only your judgments and claims, but it includes your mitigation insurance.
It just seems to, I mean, as a budgeted item, you're spending $2 million, that's almost 5% of our budget on insurance.
Mr. Marnie.
What kind of deductible do we have on this stuff?
It varies. I can have Ms. Rowlett to give you a summary of the deductible because it varies depending on which insurance it is.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Sprinkle, then Ms. Therrien.
So I know we paid $3 million out of the general fund to the recent lawsuit. I thought we paid more as well. Didn't we initially pay some amount of money and then the extra $3 million?
There's two different things. We're paying a lawsuit and then you're transferring funds to cover that lawsuit. So you transfer $3 million. To date, the city has paid the $5 million with $2 million coming back in the insurance. That's the amount that you're seeing on this report year to date. And we will pay another additional $3.25 million before the end of this year.
Okay. Any other questions? Ms. Therrien.
So Margarita, where do we see in the budget where the claims are?
You do not see the claims in the budget. They're in a separate fund. They are under your risk fund.
Okay, so I don't see the claims here. I see expenditures for insurance, but I don't see where we know what the claims are. Is it not published?
It is. It's not published.
Mr. Charter,
I'll
answer that question.
Turn to the city attorney.
Yeah, so thank you, Councilmember Therrien. So the under, on your sheet that you're looking at, you see workers' comp claims, general liability claims, kind of in the middle of that lineup. Okay. It's their aggregate listed at that. So you see the dollar amount for year to date in 2024. You wouldn't see the breakdown necessarily, but if council members have questions about more detail about any of those, I just invite you to come to my office and I can walk you through and explain all that for you.
So last year there was only 292,000 in liability claims, where this year it's over 3 million.
Yes.
Okay. And the workers' comp reimbursement, is that when we sue somebody and get insurance back, or what's all that about?
There is a workers' comp claim if that you have under when we were self-insured, and that is the reimbursement for that.
Okay. So I kind of agree with Mr. Ringstad. I can see why the claim should be in here, but the other insurance, I don't know why we're not budgeting that. That's just my concern.
When you establish the risk fund under Section 2-603, you also included mitigation insurance.
I don't know what the definition of mitigation is.
It would be the insurance that you're seeing within. That's why the general insurance is not included. The city attorney stated that that insurance, the general insurance that you see noted down the bottom under other expenditures, is not counted. That part of it is paid through the general fund, and it is transferred funds from the general fund during the budgeting process to cover the cost of that insurance. The other insurance is considered a part of mitigation insurance. And that's by definition of a city attorney.
Do we have it defined in the code what mitigation means?
Councilmember Therrien, so the specific, like workers' comp insurance, police professional insurance, even the general liability insurance, even though it carries the label general, those are specifically for certain risks that the city carries. The general insurance, and I have a note here that one of the things I'm going to get you is the deductibles and maybe a better description of this, but the general insurance isn't specific like those other types of insurance, and so that's where I think the differentiation is. But so no, to answer your question, it is not specifically mitigation
defined.
Insurance isn't defined.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Marnie, then Ms. Sprinkle.
So how often do we negotiate our rates? Once a year?
Mr. Marnie, and you'll recall David Hale and Associates came to walk us through our insurance, and it kind of details a lot of that, but it's a lot to take in at one chunk. So I'll go back through and highlight some of the deductibles and things. Also, that packet that we got, I don't know if you have it for reference, but I can certainly, if folks need another copy, find another copy. That'll have all of the descriptions of the insurance and what we're covering and, you know, what the city's deductibles are.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So when we have what we recently had was a settlement of a lawsuit, when we do that, it affects the mill rate, does it not?
Yes,
Can you explain that a little more?
The mitigation in the risks fund, your insurance, your claims and judgments are outside of the tax cap. And whatever that expenditure is for that year, that is the amount that we levy in the following year.
Any other questions?
It's outside of the cap.
Okay. We'll go on to item 3 on our agenda, capital projects. Who brought this one up?
I did. I just wanted to set a general idea of where we were. We've seen a lot of numbers coming through the budget process, and sometimes they're surprising, and sometimes I feel like for example, I know that the childcare area has been an issue for everybody, and I just wanted to see where we were with specific areas. So this is, that's why I asked about this.
We don't have the city engineer here to go through a lot of the facility and improvements, infrastructure there, but we've had an update on the City Hall's heating system, and that's on hold. I guess I have a question for Margarita. Margarita, under my budgeted $216,744, I've been quite frugal this year, not letting people get to it. So if I end the year with a nice balance, does that go back into the general account, or does that stay in the capital?
That would stay in the capital. Once okay. we transfer funds to the capital, it cannot be moved from the capital fund.
That's what I thought. Okay. And an update on fire station number 3, Mr. Sanders, you want to tell us the good news on that?
Yeah, fire station 3 is complete. They moved back in yesterday?
Last week.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks great. And it has, you know, running water that isn't just going leaking into the ground. So, I mean, that's all good stuff. So, yeah, it looks amazing, and it's in way better condition than it used to be.
And our fire training center upgrades, how are we doing with that?
They're coming along pretty well. They're in there literally every day. It's a giant construction. I took some pictures of it the other day. I was going to send people, and all you'll see is just a trashed, you know, demolished area. The server room's coming around pretty well. They've got some racks in there. They've got the new flooring. They've got the wires, everything. They're working on, it might already be done. They were working on the AC part for the server room. So it's coming along really well.
And our Portland Lou, we're showing a balance of $51,482, and that's complete. So that's a additional overage we have in the budget itself. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Going down in the public works equipment, Jeremiah, come on up. You have a motor grader. Where are we at with that?
That motor grader is in construction and should be here late winter, okay. From what I was told.
And your asphalt truck?
Asphalt truck's in the same thing. It's still being put together. Probably be here spring of 26.
Okay. And your other large one is a sweeper?
The sweeper we're still waiting on. They are on basically back order is what I was told. And it could possibly be here by spring of 26 as well.
We have two items that look like came over budget, $9,500 approximately for the excavator and $3,500 for the vapor boiler. Any other items that we might look at of overages on?
I believe that was all that came in for overages. We've saved some money on quite a bit of the other pieces, and then we also, with the mastic machine, it can do the crack sealing, as we discovered. So we canceled our order on the crack sealer since the mastic machine can do both of the jobs.
Okay. And our garbage equipment. How are we doing with that?
That one's going pretty good. I think it was earlier this year, we got the one truck, one of the smaller trucks that we had ordered. And then the rest of them we've got both of the large packers have finally come in. So we have all of the large packers that we were working on getting over the last few years now.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Next up, yes.
I just have a question. Somebody had reached out to me, like one of the old packer trucks must have been in the auction, but it didn't sell.
Yes.
What happens with equipment like that? Like we put it in the auction and it doesn't sell, now what do we do with it?
We bring it back to Public Works and we'll try again next year.
Mr. Marty.
I know this is a sore subject, but the fire truck, the ladder truck that we just sent outside for repair that was beyond economical repair, is that back or?
I believe all the fire trucks are back, right? Yeah, that one came back.
And so do we know what kind of expenditure we had on that? Is that public?
It was within budget.
Yes.
It's getting ladder tested Saturday to make sure it's 100% good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cotter. Appreciate it. We don't have the police chief here, but we do have the fire chief here. Come on up there, sir.
Mr. Marty got ahead of us.
That's okay.
Good morning.
So we're looking at an ambulance replace and...
We have two ambulances on order with Braun Manufacturing. They're on track. They're going to be built side by side. They were purchased in two different budget years, but because of chassis aligning for the Stars, we're going to get them built side by side, so they'll be identical sister units. So that'll be nice. We're hoping for delivery by the end of this year or early next year.
Okay. We're looking at a little bit overage on the vehicle for the fire chief.
Yeah, with shipping and handling and all of those other things, we did come over, but we had the funds were approved for that purchase, and that's been delivered.
That's what I would have said, too. And also, your rescue boat, you're a little bit under budget on that. Congratulations.
Yep.
How's that testing going?
That rescue boat is amazing. The build on that was very well done, and it served very well on a few water rescues already this year.
Okay, and one tender that's on order.
It's on order. It's still in the process of being built.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
And then looking at the road maintenance and items and road projects, that's our engineer who's not here this morning. Anyway, any other questions before we move on? Okay. Jared, come on up and tell us about the Willow Street project. Where are we at?
Good morning, Council. So the Willow Street project, we have had the hazardous waste company came by yesterday and took an initial look at it for demolition of the structure itself and assessing those things. Looking like it's going to be over $50,000, no surprise for that side of things. Now, for the actual purchasing and whatnot of itself, we have went ahead and it has now formally been declared blighted. That was held off initially because the ownership reached out to us to see if the city would take it over. But we went ahead and did that formally to have that part covered. And what we're working on now is, since everyone related to the property is out of state, what we're working on is the person in contact has stated that they're the executor of the estate. So we've reached out to her to establish that, can we have that in some sort of official documentation? And it's not just a power of attorney, and you're the sole executor, it's not in a big group. That will need to get deeper and deeper into any legal matters and going to probate and other fancy legal words. So once that's established, then we can work on the actual purchase element for it while hopefully making this all go to where Jeremiah's schedule isn't shot all the pieces that we're working on.
Mr. Ringstead, then Ms. Sprinkle.
So we're purchasing the property outright.
It's being gifted to us, and we'll pay for the closing costs on something like that. It'll probably be less than $500 for recording and escrow.
So they're just deeding it over, and then we assume the liability for cleaning it up and doing whatever with it.
It's ours to do with, yes.
And per code and charter, the council has that ultimate decision about whether or not to purchase the property. You'll see a resolution to that effect once we get the ownership all figured out.
But in the meantime, we've blighted it and we've gone for abatement on the structure too. So That way we, by the, this fall, we can rectify the problem. Ms. Sprinkle?
Maybe this is to the attorney, but does this mean if we've taken it over in a way that you've just explained, we don't have to wait 10 years to do something with it for tax purposes? Is that correct? It would be ours outright?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And it's, if I could expound on that a bit, because we're not taking it for public purpose, we're actually just purchasing it.
Okay, I just want to make sure there are no leftover items there. Okay,
no, it's a good question.
Mr. Marnie?
Do we have a market value for this piece of property?
Jump in on that. One of the things that the code and charter require is a title abstract, and so you'll see a bunch of different facts about the property. I think one of the things that's required per code is a market assessment too. So you'll see all of that once we get an owner to actually be on the other side of that transaction, so that you can use that to inform your decision.
Overall, it's a 20,000 square foot lot on the noise slough, surrounded by very nice properties. So once it's abated and cleaned up on the blighted, the cleanup should be covered by the value of the land when we sell it. Ms. Sprinkle?
How long has it been like this? Just curious. Has this been a problem?
This is the second time we've gone into blighted. I guess in the early 2000s it was done too. And there was a $30,000 bill on it that was never collected.
Wow.
Okay. Ms. Therrien?
So were you working with someone that just had a power of attorney until the man died? Or do you know if an estate has been opened? Because powers of attorney don't work when someone passes.
Right, right. And the person we've been in contact with is the daughter of the listed owner. He had, you know, declining physical and mental health, apparently, on that. So, and she's stated that she is the, you know, executor of everything and handling everything for her father. She's the one who's been in contact looking for the borough or the city to basically yield the property over to.
So has the owner passed or?
Not at this point, no, to the best of our knowledge.
Okay, so the power of attorney would still work then, is that right?
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct, Council Member Therrien. I don't know the status of the owner, but you're correct that if and when the owner passes away, the power of attorney will cease to be in effect. An estate has not been opened yet, so that would indicate that maybe the guy is still alive. So,
any other questions on Willow? Thank you very much. You're greatly appreciated. As you can tell, this properties are never the same. They're always evolving. So next up is Resolution 5182, a resolution requiring the Polaris Working Group meetings be publicly noticed and open to attendance by the public. This was put in by Ms. Therrien and Ms. Tidwell. Ms. Therrien, you want to handle this?
Sure. When I was on the council years ago, I always attended the Polaris group because of the Open Meeting Act. I'm unable to go to any of the meetings because there's two council members and the mayor. And we've received a lot of questions, especially now that the building is down, as to what's going to happen, what we're doing. And so I felt that it was important that the meetings from now on be publicly noticed and open to attendance, so any of the council members over two can also attend the meetings. So I'm hoping that the council will support this.
Any other questions? Mr. Marnie, then Ms. Sprinkle.
Well, it's not really a question, it's a statement. I've been on council for 5 years, and it's still a mystery what this group does. You know, I don't know when it meets or where it meets or who's on the group. But just, it's a kind of a mystery that is not real transparent in my mind. So I fully support this resolution or ordinance.
Do you want a co-sponsor?
I will put my name on it, yes.
Any other discussion? Ms. Sprinkle?
So when we work into deep numbers, contracts, and the specifics of creating a letter of interest and or RFP, some of that is very, very sensitive, and I don't know how you do that without...
I'll bring that up under mine.
That's my concern. I appreciate being public, but some of these questions that we're talking about are really... It wouldn't behoove our city to do that kind of conversation out loud. Although I know that sounds not where I want it to sound. It's just, I think some of this stuff is sensitive. So that's my concern.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ringstead.
I appreciate the concern of not knowing what's going on. I mean, it's been to this point, we kind of meet periodically. We're making headway, I think, and the pace may pick up on that. I think the key here is to get it so everybody knows what's going on. And I agree with what Sue's saying, and I don't know that we need public involvement in every time we have a discussion, but that becomes cumbersome to me. I think we do need to have, at this point, probably a regular, maybe every other Monday, at our Monday evening meetings, we have an update as to what's happening and what's going on, so we can have some discussion on it, which will then be publicly noticed, and people, listening on the radio with our large radio audience can actually be more aware of what's going on. I have... The comments I've received over the last 6 months or a year have been actually relatively few, but they're kind of all over the map. Some people want a park, some people want a 12-story building, it's kind of all over. We're getting to a point of going out now to have a solicitation for interested parties, not necessarily a hard proposal just yet, but... I think we need to talk more about and make sure the rest of the group is up to speed on where we at, what the discussions, and where we think the next steps are. But I think that should be happening on a regular basis as this moves forward, because hopefully in the next 6 to 12 months is something will be moving forward. So I think the more dialogue we have here, the better off we are. I know Danny just loves open meeting notices, but to me, it as we try and move forward and have discussions, we need to get specifics on some of the details of where we're going. I think we need the discussion in this group to say, yeah, that's where we want to go. I don't think we're at a point yet to have public input on any proposal, because we don't have any proposals. So we're trying to go that direction. So I'm not sure our problem isn't more of a communication problem than an open meetings problem.
Mr. Clayworth.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I'm looking at this a little different than the council. Going back in history, when we had the Fairbanks Development Authority, they consolidated two city blocks in the core area. When they were voted out of existence, all that property fell into the laps of the city, and the council took it over. And we had to make the decisions on what to do with the properties. Ultimately, we sold three buildings, Chino, Lathrop, Lacey Street Theater, and decided to develop the other part of that property. We went out to an RFP to get proposals, and that was pretty much it. The other block 39, was the Lavery Transportation Center, and there was a group set up to put together the bonding for that facility. At this point, we're finally seeing a lot that's available for development. To me, the key issues are, do we want to sell it? I think the answer is yes, we want to sell it. Are we going to do that through an RFP or an LOI? Well, we need to make that decision as a council. then who sets the parameters? What do we not want to see? What do we want to see on that property? If any parameters at all, except anything and everything that people want to present to us. And we, the council, should make that decision. The parameters of that LOI or RFP, whichever the council decides to go, would then be set by legal and staff, you know, to put out an RFP that's well done and gives good guidance as to the groups that want to respond to it. So I'm kind of looking at it differently, that this council at some point very soon becomes, whether we call it an ad hoc group or whatever, we become that body and start having these open discussions on what we want to see and then working with staff and setting up those parameters. So I'm not sure why we're even forming another committee at this point.
Any other discussion? Ms. Therrien?
Well, I still go back to the fact that not everybody on the council knows what's going on. And I really think that we need to be able to notify the public that we're having a meeting and that the council members that want to go to those meetings can go. So that's my real concern.
Ms. Tidwell, then, Mr. Ringstead.
I think that, just like Jerry was saying, I think it's coming to that point where we really do need to be involved. And if there's going to be a group of people that are meeting, talking about the specifics of, you know, putting out the RFP or, you know, starting to bring in interested parties, we definitely should be a part of that. And if that's not happening here at council and it's happening somewhere else, I absolutely think that it needs to be an open meeting so that we can go and be part of that. If that group is going to be talking about sensitive things, then I would assume that would be like an executive session. I don't think at this point there should be a group making decisions that isn't open to all of us.
Mr. Ringstead.
I agree with you, Jerry. And I think it makes sense. And maybe what we need to do is have a good discussion about at a work session where all of us can sit and say exactly where we think this should be going and come to a consensus. And my guess is it's real close to what the discussion has been so far, but the council should be into this in the discussion. And I see the working group as doing the detail work to get this job done. But we need to have more discussion and dialogue, I think, with the council to make sure the council's all on board. All we got to do is put on the agenda for the next work session.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Well, as opposed to having it as part of one of the 20 items, I think maybe it would be better if we did a work session prior to a council meeting. So it's specific and only to that point. I think that would be more beneficial. You know, can half an hour do it? I don't know, but I feel like putting it on a work session really does limit the time we can spend on something that is important. So I just throw that out to you as well. Thank you.
That sort of rolls us into next resolution, mine. I'll give you an update. Maybe put a lot of your thoughts in a good perspective. Clara's working group, for all intensive purposes, is over and retired. The people working on what we're doing is, I have myself, Councilmember Sprinkle, Councilmember Ringstead, the city engineer, the city chief of staff, and one person outside of the city, and that's C.B. Bettisworth. We started looking at this, and what we're going to be presenting to you at the next work session is our letter of interest that we will be discussing with you that we've designed for your input. If you accept the letter of interest, what we will be doing is putting that out for a 90-day period to see if we get back anything of interest. After the 90-day period, then you will be looking at, before we get there, you'll be looking at the request for proposal from anyone wanting to build something. We decided to separate it out this way because we wanted people to have an interest, and then on the request for proposal, that's where they make an investment. They will be showing us in the request for proposal schematics, architectural renderings, values, cash flows, economics of what the structure will be. We looked at this and said, this is public property. We have to be very careful in time frame with this. And that's why we went basically a 90-day letter of interest, and we'll be publicizing that and getting that out to as many organizations that we've described as we can. You'll be hearing that at the next work session. And then we also looked at it and said, the engineer, city engineer, this put it perfectly bluntly, if we opened up this letter of interest discussion to the public, we would never get it done, period. And I thought, you know, you're absolutely right, but we have a city council. So before we put out the letter of interest, you'll be seeing it. You'll be involved in it as you've been the whole time on the Polaris site itself. It's your property, it's city council property. And I put together the best of the brightest so far. And I took a look at it and said, probably CB Bettysworth has done more RFPs or responded to more RFPs. We'll also be bringing in the city attorney. That way you'll know what's happening. So I looked at this and I asked the city attorney, drop an ordinance, a resolution. And he had to get something on paper real fast on Thursday for your submittal. And I've looked at this and I said, well, I didn't want to call it the Polaris Working Group, so I'm probably going to be reworking this because that time frame is gone. Now it's just a group putting together the letter of interest for your review and approval before we publicize it. So we've got a pretty good group, and Valerie wanted to be on it, and I said, yeah, you can be on it. And then I was told by the city attorney and a few others, no, she can't be on it because it violates the Open Meeting Act. I said, oh, okay. So that's where we're at. Any questions? Ms. Therrien?
Will these ad hoc working groups be noticed to the public?
No, because what happens when you notice to the public, you have a very specific date, and it's already, everyone changes their schedule. You try getting John Ringstead at a place and CB Bettysworth at a place without the schedule changing. We haven't been able to do that. So my thought is, put this together, bring it back to the city council for review and approval.
And the Open Meeting Act will still apply to this ad hoc group?
So the challenge that I think we're all facing is the Open Meetings Act defines a meeting if there are more than three individuals there. Right now, you've got Councilmember Sprinkle, Councilmember Ringstead, and the mayor attending the meeting. If a fourth person is there, it would be defined by the Open Meetings Act as a meeting and would require public notice. So the challenge is that currently it's not defined as a meeting under the Open Meetings Act, but if you were to add an additional council member, it would be defined as a meeting and would be subject to the public notice. That's why the restriction.
And hence the scheduling of everyone gets quite unique at best. Mr. Clayworth.
So Mayor, the point of your resolution is to simply engage this committee for the one sole purpose of a LOI.
And then the RFP. And with the city council review.
So council would review the LOI to see if we're in agreement with that or want to modify it, and then go out to an RFP. Is it your intent in the LOI to put parameters on that? I mean, what do we not want to see there? Should that be included in the LOI, whatever that might be?
You know, we've had that discussion, and the parameters, there are no parameters, to tell you the truth, on the LOI. From there, we'll see what comes back, and then we'll start putting together a request for proposal, and that's where we'll start putting the parameters on the request for proposal. On the letter of interest, what we want to do is take a look at who wants to do something there, and are they fiscally able to do something and complete it, and what is their overall idea?
Okay, so you're thinking, if we said, hey, we don't really want to park there, we want to develop something and be able to tax it someday.
Yes. You
would think that would come up when the council gets the LOI and puts some parameters for the RFP to say, we are not looking for the development of a park, or we are, whatever it is.
Well, also, from there. What we're also doing is on September 12th, we're having an open house for the public. And that'll be located at the Lathrop Building in a space there that used to have the venue in it. And that's where we're going to be giving a public presentation on where we're at, what we're doing, and also taking public testimony of what they would like to see in the facility. That way, we have the public input of what they want, or what they would like to see.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, we're going to move on to Ordinance 6322, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code 2-63, succession of the office of the acting mayor, and Section 264, salary of acting mayor, and it's not been introduced. Chief of Staff Sanders, you want to bring us how we got here?
Yeah, all right. So
in case something happens to me.
Yeah, so the next three things are all, like, tied together. On April 30th, a bunch of us went up to UAF for a FEMA course. It was the Incident Command System for Executives and Senior Officials. And part of the presentation was on how to, best ensure that your community is able to get FEMA reimbursements for emergencies. And Dr. Pennington was leading that discussion from UAF, and one of the things that was suggested was to make sure that everything is clearly defined in your code. So that got us, looking at the code and realizing that there was some stuff in there that isn't accurate anymore, so we just wanted to fix it. And one of the first ones was the succession of the mayor. When we get to another part in here, the ordinance 6324, that's really the meat of what we were doing. But as we were going through that, a bunch of us realized that the succession of the mayor is not clear in code. So we wanted to clarify that. So that's what we did with this ordinance with 6322. It's pretty simple. Rather than having this office of acting mayor thing that was happened before, we have a mayor pro tempore, and it's essentially the same way that it was set up before, but it gets rid of all this weird language about office of acting mayor.
Questions? Mr. Ringstad.
Here, in the succession, it goes to the person with the most seniority. You know, I've seen people sit in office in other locations, not here, that sit there a long time doesn't mean they're competent.
You know, Mr. Ring said, the city council can adjust this however they want. You could, but say something happens to the mayor in an emergency situation, and it needs someone immediate. Are you going to have a vote, or do you have a succession lined up, and then a vote to replace later? So it's open for whatever you want to do.
So currently, if not necessarily in an emergency, you keel over tomorrow, how do we get a new mayor? Does the council?
What's always happened is that? What we've done before is if I'm not here, the person with the highest seniority would be the mayor pro tem, would be the mayor pro tem. Until the next election.
The next election, so yeah. Apparently not.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing.
And then
there's nothing in code at all at this point.
No, there's There's code. The only parts of the code that are changed are the parts that are crossed out and the parts that are.
So this is what we're going forward with.
Right. Yeah, we're just cleaning up the language on this one.
Mr. Clearworth, you've been mayor before.
Yeah. You know, in the absence of the mayor, the chief of staff is always assumed to be that person for short-term absences, supposedly. And then in the absence of the chief of staff, it was really up to the mayor to appoint who would be that third person in line. And when I was around, it was the HR director. It doesn't have to be. It could be the CFO or somebody like that. But I don't think that's clarified in code anywhere for a short term. And that's always been left up to the discretion of the mayor to pick somebody. And that seems to have always worked well. I'm looking at this one part here. It says, while serving as mayor pro tempore, council member forego council member salary, but will receive comp from the mayor. I'm not sure I am in line with that, but anyway, we'll think about it. This is coming forward. Most likely, whoever that council member might be has another job. And for them to be able to stop that job immediately and say, okay, I'm going to be here full time, would be pretty much impossible for anybody to do, especially if it's a short time and they give up a job to be a mayor for 2 months or 3 months. So we might want to rethink that thing. I notice on the second ordinance here, you're actually defining chief of staff authorities. I guess question for legal. In the past, you know, we've always left that up to mayor to determine who that would be acting in their absence. Is it necessary to define that?
Councilmember Clearworth, as the chief of staff pointed out, these three are kind of traveling together, 6322, 6323, and 6324. I think that there is value in putting into code things that require immediate attention, so we're not scrambling. And you've pointed this out before that, you know, resolutions, ordinances, unless they're in code, sometimes get lost, and particularly in a moment of crisis. That being said, I do think that there, and I've expressed this opinion, I try to keep the code as skinny as possible so that we don't have some 900-page document. And so for things like mayoral succession, you know, what the chief of staff can do, the authorities, I do think that that's more important that it's in code. Things like, and I forgot, and I know Mike and I differ a little bit on this, but in the emergency ops plan, I think there's a section of it that, frankly, I think is policy procedure, not necessarily something that's in code. You know, it's not a legal thing, it's a personal preference, but I think that if your code starts to be too long, it in itself loses some effect there. So, Councilmember Clearworth, I guess to your question, there's some preference in there, not just legal, but I do hear what Chief of Staff Sanders is saying, that, you know, if we're trying to apply for FEMA reimbursement for emergencies in times of crisis, maybe we want things a little bit more spelled out.
Mr. Marty, then Mr. Ringstead.
Well, my idea, I know you guys meet as a management team, what, twice a week? I think that would be, you know, with the chief of staff and your department heads, they would take over the operation of the city, and with the council's, you know, yay or nay for the final decision. That's, I mean, you guys, you know, have an expertise in each field, and that combined, I think you have a working relationship currently by meeting twice a week. That would be the way I'd like to see the city run.
Mr. Sanders.
Yeah, if I could, this is for, like, in the event of the mayor is no longer able to do this job, not in the event of the mayor is gone for a few weeks, and then obviously during that time I'm taking it. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we do it every time. That's how Mayor Matherly before him and I did it. Like, that's there's no question there, none whatsoever. This is more of like, and the reason that all this came together is, let's say that we have a major disaster here. We have some huge earthquake or something that just rocks Fairbanks, and let's say that the mayor is incapacitated, unable to finish this. Do you want somebody who's not elected to be, I'm still gonna be running the day-to-day operations just like normal, like I'm doing right now, but do you want me to be the one declaring a state of emergency, or should that be an elected official? That's really what this all boils down to. And I personally think that it should be an elected official, not somebody who was appointed, that's declaring a state of emergency. And that's really what drove this whole, us looking at this again. Day-to-day operations, nothing's gonna change there. The mayor could take a 6-month sabbatical and I will handle it for him. But everything else, like if he becomes incapacitated and it gets to the point where, you know, from an emergency, I think that should be an elected official rather than a appointed. You're right, one elected official rather than waiting 2 weeks for the council to make the decision. I think we need to have an immediate succession plan. So in this case, it would be Mr. Cleworth, obviously. He has most experience. It would, you know, say Mayor Pruse is incapacitated. We have a major disaster. Mayor Tempore Cleworth would be able to declare the emergency without there being any issues.
Mr. Ringstead.
Probably the biggest mistake made after the Exxon Valdez was nobody knew who was in charge. And for the first 3 days, under perfect weather, the state, the feds, and the owners argued as to who was in charge. And during that 3 days, the oil went everywhere, right? What became very apparent to everybody afterwards was incident command system. Basically, they're designed after the military because they work. If we have a major crisis, we probably don't want to wait a week long enough to give public notice, 2 weeks, whatever it is, for us to have a meeting and decide what we're going to do, right? So I agree with the idea we need to have a clear system of who's in charge. Theoretically, if the person pro tem comes in to fill out the rest of the term, that could be 2.5 years. I don't know that we want an unelected mayor for 2.5 years.
Actually, I think what happens is it goes to the next election.
Yeah, so if that's the case, then we're talking short of a year. But I think we need to have that be real clear as to what we're doing. Day-to-day is one thing. I think I agree with Mike. The day-to-day is one thing. The policy decisions, I think, should be left to elected officials. But most of your policy decisions aren't made in 24 hours. So being clear as to who, you know, if David gets hit by a bus tomorrow, who's running it the next day, right? So I think that needs to be clear. I just think we need to be careful as to what it is and what it's supposed to do. It's not going to be the answer for all things. But if you have a major disaster, you need to know who's in charge, and that person needs to step up and deal with it immediately. And I think Jerry's right. Most council members aren't going to be ready to just give up their life and their job and everything else for 2 months, 6 months, 8 months, whatever it is. So.
Mr. Cleworth.
Question for legal. Mayor, do you mind if we kind of take these three as a bundle here and talk about them?
Okay. Best thing to do.
Spelling out on the second one here, the chief of staff authorities, should we go down, should we make a stipulation in there that the mayor can appoint? If the chief of staff is not around, and that has happened, when both are gone, the mayor and the chief of staff, Do you want to go one level below that, or just say something like the mayor can make that appointment?
You know, you want to make a contingency for anything and everything. And we looked, they went to a catastrophic event type situation. So you have to have a succession plan or chief of staff or his replacement. And what you could happen is you have the council, you put in place the next mayor pro tem, and if the chief of staff is unable to continue, the mayor pro tem can appoint another chief of staff, because that is one of the two positions that the mayor actually hires. Yeah, so I think the most important thing is to get a succession, however you want to do it. Then after that, that mayor pro tem, if there anything happens to the chief of staff, and you know he's a great guy and nothing's going to happen to him, but the mayor can, then mayor pro tem can then take a new chief of staff if needed.
I'm just thinking on short term, yeah. If you're stuck in someplace in the world you can't get back or something, but the chief of staff is on vacation, then you can have that authority to name somebody.
we put Margarita in there, and she's no one opposes Margarita. They can't wait for Mike to get back.
And the last question I have then on the emergency declaration, we went through COVID. I think we were called into special session in order to make this emergency where we shut down all the small businesses. Big mistake, but that's what happened. I think the council had to buy off on that. And the main reason for that is under the tax cap, we can tax for emergencies, refund ourselves for an emergency, but it needs to be declared, I think, by the city council. I don't think that the mayor or acting mayor or anyone can unilaterally say, well, we have an emergency. Our snow is way too high and spring's coming, and I'm going to go ahead and exercise the emergency clause, tap into the $200,000 we have set aside, and then thereby doing that, we can tax the taxpayers in the next year under the emergency provisions. I think the council needs to be involved in an emergency declaration. I understand that you don't have the time if the flood hits you tonight at 1 a.m. or something, that we can't call the council in on that, but ultimately the council has to make that decision or back it up in order to comply with, I think, the terms of our charter. Just my thought.
I want everyone to take a look at this over the next week. This is nothing that has a pending requirement. So we can postpone this, talk about it more for comfortability. But we saw the hole in our operation on succession. So ponder it. And now we're gonna go to item number 10, the Finance Committee report. Margarita.
Hey, good morning again, council members. The Finance Committee met on July the 24th. Our statements as of June the 30th, we had a fund balance of 10.1 million, very close to that 10 million mark. The cash flow report was at 21.2 million. We had revenues of 20.7 million in the general fund and expenditures of 21.8 million. At that meeting, the Finance Committee members reviewed the long-range financial projections and the target-based budgeting preliminary operating costs. They did not make any changes on the numbers, but did make some recommendation on reporting. The committee members, they're still working on the non-tax, increasing non-tax revenue by 10%. And the topic that we discussed at that meeting was optimizing revenues from auctions. And we have a report from city staff. And we have made some changes internally from in 2023 to improve auction revenues. And they felt that what we have put in place was fine moving forward. Our next meeting will be Thursday, August the 28th, and we'll continue reviewing our financial statements and discussing items to increase non-tax revenue. You also have before you the June 30 year-to-date budget report. If you have any questions, I'm available whenever you would like to meet to discuss them.
Any questions for Margarita? Okay. Oh, yes, Valerie.
I thought you guys meet every 2 weeks. You only meet once a month?
No, we only meet, correct. We meet once a month.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle, did you have something? Okay. Well, Ms. Sprinkle, we'll start with you with council member comments then.
No, nothing citywide. I'm just going to celebrate the best Saturday golf game we had since I can't remember. As a team, John, Lonnie, and I, and Jeremiah Cotter, we did pretty well. We didn't get on the board, but we took some money home. So that was pretty good. And I just want to say it was a lovely day, and thank you, Valerie, for making that happen. So, well done.
Ms. Therrien.
Yeah, I think the city best did a really good job on the golf tournament. And I think we really need to think about whether or not the community needs to be able to come to meetings dealing with the Polaris group. And I hear what the three of you are saying, but, you know, it's just, it seems like it's almost a secret. And I'm just really concerned about that. So I really hope that you will think about that. Thank you.
Mr. Clearworth. Mr. Ringstead. Mr. Marnie.
No comment.
Ms. Tidwell.
No comment.
Amira's comments. I'm going to be removing my resolution. The reason is, basically, there is no Polaris working group anymore. We have five people in the building that are looking at a letter of interest. It's contracts. And that's where we're at now. So there's, if you want to do anything with the resolution with the Polaris working group, basically, it's that time has passed. We will be having an open house for the public to weigh in on what they would like to see. At our next meeting, if not work session, you'll be seeing the letter of interest that goes out for all of you to take a look and adjust that. And we'll see how that works out with the public for a 90-day review and see if we get anything back. Also, starting on Friday at midnight, we have security down in the Golden Heart Plaza that is needed, that we are hiring Securitas on. And that's all I got. We're going to, Jerry, you want to bring us into executive session?
Actually, Mayor, where is the funding coming for that Securitas?
It comes from the hotel motel bed tax money that was not expended. And I talked with Margarita before, and she says we can do it with that. And the contract is approximately $10,000 per month. They go from basically 10 in the evening to 6 a.m. That is when the bad actors come out, because we don't have people down there protecting it. And that's what we need to do. And so it goes until October 31st. And hopefully by then, weather will keep the bad actors out of there. If you want to see the reason why we did this, Mr. Sanders has a tape of a lady being almost assaulted, and she escaped by locking herself in the Portland Loo. And when we saw that, that's when I said, okay, we need not more security now. So that's what we're doing. Any other questions for me? Mr. Ringstead.
Do ladies getting assaulted have a higher priority than me getting assaulted?
Mr. Ring said, if you would have had a Portland Lou, you would have thrown him in it. Okay, Mr. Clearworth, you want to bring us in? I'm sorry.
Yes. I just have a question. If it's $10,000 a month for security, why didn't are we doing it that way just because it's a temporary thing? Like, why would we not just hire some more police officers?
Well, I mean,
what can a security guard do?
We don't have enough police officers to park them in a place like that full time. So we put out a bid, and we sent it to five different companies, and we got one bid back. So I'm not going to have a single police officer that protects the rest of the city just down there. We were able to fill this hole by security. So that's what I'm doing. Mr. Marty.
I think we need to have more conversation on this.
Certainly. That will be interesting because I had planned to do that next April. However, the situation was getting out of hand. Yeah, and what happens is it's from 10 p.m. now to 5 a.m. And
or
so,
8 a.m.
Or 8 a.m. Yeah, so it was time. We had the funding to do it, and therefore we're protecting Fairbanks. Mr. Clearworth.
This is for just a 1 month, 2 months?
Yeah. It's through October 31st.
Okay. You want me to go on executive session now?
Yep.
Okay. I go ahead and move that we go into the executive session to discuss one item, City of Fairbanks, Fairbanks Firefighter Union arbitration decision.
Okay, we're going to go into executive session at approximately 8:15. Thank you, everyone. Okay, Mr. Clearworth, want to bring us back in?
City Council met in executive session to discuss one item. As mentioned previously, no formal action taken.
Is there a motion to adjourn? Seeing no opposition, we're adjourned.